She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Happy Saturday. And remember that tagline, it's so important. We will never tell you what to think. We just want you to. Welcome to our show. Another exciting, fun, informative show, I hope, for everybody. I want to start out by talking about our sponsor for this show. And it's, believe it or not, it's a company called PopCycle. And they are located in Tucson. And the reason they are the sponsor of this show is because they were the winners of Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge. And they were actually one of two Mrs. Green's choices because it's a voting contest. We had such unbelievably great participation. And I had to choose. There was a Mrs. Green's choice, and I will never do it again. I can tell you that because it was way too hard. But what PopCycle does is they make art in the store from recycled materials, reused products, and refurbished goods. And that really makes sense to PopCycle and to people that love art that's upcycled and repurposed. And they're really devoted to this kind of work. They buy from local artists. They buy from artists around the country. And that use repurposed material. They are very obvious and committed to the consciousness of fair trade. So if there's an artist on an international level, they make sure that it's one that they want to have as part of their community. So the winners of Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge proudly said yay, yay to PopCycle. They came in, they got their community out, they got a lot of people to vote. It was really fun to watch the voting every day. And there, it was like David and Goliath. So we were happy to see them win, and I really was happy to make them the Mrs. Green's Choice Award. If you're listening from somewhere other than Tucson, which I know there are quite a few of you, if you come to Tucson, they're on 4th Avenue, and they have a great store. It's the kind of place where you can kind of go down the green rabbit hole, because each little section is like a, you know, you have to just look there and absorb it all. So 4th Avenue is a happening place in Tucson, Arizona. So for our visitors, of which we have many, please put PopCycle on your list of places to see and make sure you tell them Mrs. Green sent you. So our featured guest today is Joe Abraham, the Director of Sustainability at the University of Arizona. He is in studio with us, and he is doing great things at the university. He's a very down-to-earth, very well-informed, connected individual, and we are so proud to have Joe on the show and to have him share with us what's going on at the university. He's actually there as kind of like the major integrator to make things happen at the U of A, because there are so many diverse and vast numbers of initiatives going on in terms of what the faculty is working on, what the staff are committed to, and what the students are engaged in terms of sustainability for the planet. We're talking global here. So, Joe, we'll wait till Colleen comes in. We can certainly segue with this. I thank you for coming and taking the time out of your busy day. Lots of people want a piece of Joe. I know that. So let's talk about the department is relatively new, and you have been in the position how long? I'm not sure. Talk about what your role is and the role of the Office of Sustainability at the University of Arizona.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me come on.
I couldn't wait. It was hard to get you. It was like booking the Pope. So go ahead.
So the Office of Sustainability, in a nutshell, plays mostly a coordinating role at the university. And the reason for that is because there is so much going on in so many different areas of
the
university.
So much going on.
Everything from education and research to outreach to how we run the university to the various student programs or programs that support student success that are extracurricular, co-curricular. And it requires a lot of coordination to bring that all together so that we're making sure that everything is in alignment and of the best value possible in terms of the entire university.
So it's students, faculty, and staff.
Yes.
And it's almost, I mean, I think it's really fair to say the university has grown so much, it's like a small city. You have on-site, the campus is gorgeous, you have other campuses, you have Biosphere 2, it's all part of the same umbrella. So you've got a lot going on there in that small city. So when you talk about interfacing or coordination, we're talking fleet management, waste management, facilities management. I mean, they're all little cities within themselves. So is your role to tell the left hand what the right is doing, or to come out with a common, you know, mission and make sure everybody's playing to the same, you know, singing from the same book?
Well, I like to think of what I'm doing and what the office is doing is operating in startup mode. So we were established by previous President Shelton.
Okay.
A little over a year ago in October 2010.
Yeah.
And it was really driven by students that had worked with the president and built the support and demonstrated the support across the student body for additional resources for sustainability programming at the university. And so working with the regents, there was the creation of basically new resources for sustainability. And then over the summer of 2010, there was an effort to establish the right kinds of organizations and institutions at the university that would allow for greater coordination, et cetera, to happen. And so what came out of that was the office and an advisory council for the president, as well as something called the Green Fund, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. But those three are the kind of newest parts that were really kicked off in the fall of 2010 that have done very well and continue to do great things. The original question you were asking me again, I feel like I'm on a tangent there.
It's great. It's about the whole oversight of the integration of all of those different departments, because that's huge. And sure. And I think you did really answer that. It's sure. Like you're in a startup mode, and it was a big, huge job already in place before you came on board. I don't mean the job, but I mean all of the things that were going on, and to come in to try to be kind of like the orchestra leader with a lot of members of the band is I'm sure there are days when it's a little bit challenging. What about the mindset? I'm big on mindset because having done this now for almost 4 years, I've interviewed so many extraordinary people doing extraordinary things, and innovative, creative, early adopters, you know, on the cutting edge of sustainability. But at the end of the day, if I know them on a personal level or when we talk off air, they're developing the next greatest thing in solar, but they don't recycle and they use plastic bottles. And to me, what I have hopefully evolved to is there's an inconsistency in that, not an ignorance. Maybe it is an ignorance, not a stupidity, but it really is an integrated effort. And if you're helping with the development of solar, but you're massively consuming plastic bottles, there's to me a disconnect there that we need to help integrate. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So are people that you're working with at the university interested in like just having grass that doesn't use a lot of water? Or are they saying, we don't want any more plastic water bottles in our department? I don't want you to rat anybody out, but it is like moving herds of people into another consciousness. That's, to me, very real and very necessary.
I think universities are fairly progressive places, and that allows for universities to be leaders in sustainability on a number of different fronts.
That's a great answer.
I think it's hard for an individual to be perfect, and I think
we
all
that.
Have to pick our battles, but, you know, I spend a fair amount of time in the research side of the university and understand that people can completely invest themselves in a very focused area that may make it hard for them to be holistic. But the time that I've spent there and continue to interact with researchers and people in the academic side of the university is I feel people are very committed to promoting sustainability and are very concerned about the future. And they certainly do what they can. And so some people, while they may not be able to practice on a daily basis the most sustainable life that they would like to, they may be working on advancing policy at the national level that may have such a large impact that they could have the most unsustainable life and it would be a drop in the bucket relative to what they can accomplish at the national level. So,
And the global level.
The global impact. Absolutely.
You know, Roger Angel comes to mind. I have no idea about his personal habits. So there's no, I saw him with a plastic water bottle once, nothing like that at all. But he's a perfect example of his research in solar. He's one of the top in the world. And if all of the things that he dreams about, I've read a lot about him, would love to have him on the show, comes true, the impact for mankind is almost immeasurable in terms of alternative energy. I mean, we could really flip some other switches in the solar arena. So that's a perfect example of what you're talking about. Their dreams and visions for flipping the switch in their areas are so vast, it's okay if they use a plastic bag now and then. I get it. I really get it. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, go into the foray of sports. I mean, it's another one of the areas that I get passionate about. I'm a huge Wildcat fan. And by and large, sporting events, I think sporting departments, athletic departments, from what I read, from the things that I go to, there is progress. There is some forward motion because they really do produce a lot of waste. And they have fields that require a lot of water and all of that. How is the U of A positioning itself in terms of sustainability with U of A sports? And is that one of the things that you interface with? That's like another big city within the little city. The U of A sports is another institution.
Sure. Well, when the new athletic director, Greg Byrne, was announced, I remember reaching out to my equivalent at the university he was at and essentially was asking if he was what he was
on
like
board and, or needing to be converted.
Yeah. And I forget exactly what I had asked, but the sustainability coordinator there had replied and indicated that Greg was actually quite good to work with and was very forward thinking and in fact CC'd Greg, and I think he's known for his kind of twittering and being on
top of things. He is really, anybody that I know that really spends time with him, he constantly twitters. So yeah. Yes, he's a big Twitter guy.
And so he got back to both of us and said he had looked forward to getting involved.
Did he get back to you on Twitter or on email?
It was an email. So, you know, but it was probably off of a phone. So, you know, it was almost instantaneous, which was very refreshing. And so, you know, but he's a very busy guy. And,
very busy guy.
And athletics has a lot of things to work on, and we've just begun working with them on some strategies because there's a lot of opportunities to demonstrate to all the people for which athletics is the primary interface for the university.
Right. That's when they go on campus, that's when they interface.
Right. Yep. That sustainability is a value that the university holds, and that athletics is a great ambassador of that. And so, I can't really get into the details of what we're talking about, but it's quite possible that this coming year could be a pretty exciting one for that area.
So that's another show in the fall. I can't wait to hear the news right here first on Mrs. Green's World. So, but it goes back to what you said in the beginning about you are really new to the job. It's a new position to the university in terms of how old the university is, and you're working in the startup mode, assembling your team. You have other members that are under your purview. So it's really taking those small steps for a big impact. Is that fair to say? And that excites me. You know, I got a call the other day from the person that's chairing the big Boys and Girls Club event here in Tucson. And I know that I can announce it because I've confirmed with her today. You go to these events that are for such good causes like the Boys and Girls Club, and they have huge, wildly successful events because they have so much support, and they produce massive amounts of waste. So we are going to have, they call it the event in April on Earth Day, and we are going to make it a green event. They're partnering with Mrs. Green and the Fairfax companies, and it's not easy. You just don't make it a green event. There are lots of pieces. There are added expense. What do you do about water bottles? So at least we're going to make it a much greener event. We might call it much greener or going greener, but we're going to focus a lot on recycling. And to me, like U of A sports, it has such a pebble in the pond impact because if people are there and they're seeing, you know, Greg Byrne, who is absolutely a very visible profile in this community and nationally, getting on board and making that whole huge world a partner in sustainability, I mean, that's a big shift. Mm-hmm. That's really a big shift. I think that's really excited. Okay, so in your role in the day-to-day life of Joe Abraham, are you interfacing, just give us a little bit about a look of your world. Is your primary focus interfacing with students? Is it staff? Is it faculty? And how do you divide that up? Because you described a very big role that you have. So what are the pieces that you spend your time on, or is it all of it? And what's your integrated approach?
Well, what I can say is that the office has been around, and I've been operating in this position for a little over a year now. And I feel confident kind of saying that I'm starting to hit a plateau. Unless there's two of me or I bring on another coordinator of sorts, that it's probably going to...
You're maxed out.
So what I've done is I have monthly meetings with student leaders who are very active in sustainability. They engage other students. They have projects that go around. I also have a monthly meeting with a number of directors, facilities management, planning, design, construction, parking, transportation, the unions, the Arboretum, Biosphere 2. And we set up these meetings so that we're all talking, collaborating, and we have some key projects that we're moving forward. I also meet with our President's Advisory Council, the co-chairs, every month, and then that committee meets every 2 months. And I'm probably forgetting some other standing meetings, but we've essentially worked on setting up a whole number of standing meetings so that I'm getting around. One area that I tend to not spend as much time in is in the academic parts of the university.
Right.
And part of that is because when I look at the enormity of the university, I'm certainly not concerned at all about the level of activity in this area, in sustainability,
right, right,
in our academic areas. So, in fact, that the challenge is probably more of engaging with all the people and finding a way to communicate and understand what everyone is doing. And so I could see myself expanding more into that. I'm not entirely sure how to do that right now. But I do already work with a couple of deans and hope to kind of expand out to other parts of the...
And that's a beginning. It's interesting because when you know, it brings up so many people that I've interviewed on the show, and one of my favorite guests, truly, I say that about a lot of my guests, was Robert Glennon, who wrote Unquenchable, Surviving the World's Water Crisis. And I went and I heard him speak, and he's married to my friend Karen, and he came and did an event for our sponsors where he spoke and did the presentation. I really lucked out on that one because his speaking fees, he's making such a difference. But yesterday on one of the national, it might have been on the U of A Now, there was an article about a 16-year-old in, I think, Nashville. Don't quote me. It's up on my Facebook. Having read Robert's book, and what he wanted for his 17th birthday was for people to donate to water causes, because he had no idea that over 1.5 billion people in the world have no access to clean water. So when you talk about, you know, academia and the faculty, they're busy doing their thing. And there's Robert Glennon making an impact around the country. He's going everywhere. He's speaking in Australia and New Zealand. I mean, he gets around. And it all, to me, is a positive reflection on the efforts of the University of Arizona. I love hearing what he has to say about water. And I love having he and Colleen get into it about corn as ethanol. It's really kind of fun. I'm never having them on the same show. So if she calls in or if she's hearing me, it's really okay. So this is darting around a little bit. And actually I want to segue, right? We have about a minute till the break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the students, because you've brought that up a couple of times, and the your interface with them and your interest with them and them as a motivating force with Robert Shelton to be on the President's Council, and maybe some of the changes, because we're going to be in transition again with the U of A president and hope that he's coming on. So if you just tuned in, we're going to take a short break. I am having the pleasure of interviewing Joe Abraham, who's the Director of Sustainability for the University of Arizona. This is Mrs. Green's World, and hopefully we'll have a call in from our buddy Colleen Crowninshield from Clean Cities, because she is, her department and her area is having a global impact. They're moving fleets, literally. So please stay with us, stay here with me, and we'll be back. We'll be talking to Joe about his vision for the future, his interface with the local community, and what he knows about the national scene. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
The Fairfax Companies is Tucson's green waste disposal solution. Contractors, landscapers, or do-it-yourselfers, come see us. We recycle almost all types of construction and landscape waste. Eastside Speedway and Prudence, Northwest I-9-I-10, Southeast Drexel and Houghton. The Fairfax Companies is the leader in the business of sustainability. We're open to the public and cost less than other landfills. Call 290-9313, 290-9313, or visit us online at thefairfaxcompanies.com.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green. Do you know that you can save up to $258 a year on fuel costs when you drive a VW 2011 Jetta TDI clean diesel from Chapman? And you can travel up to 609 miles per tank and reduce those ugly, sooty emissions by 90%. And remember, Chapman doesn't just sell cars. They provide you with the best ownership experience possible. Visit them at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, and we're having a great interview today with Joe Abraham, who's the director of the Office of Sustainability at the University of Arizona. And Joe, thanks for being here. I want to repeat some of what we said earlier. The university, on so many levels, in terms of the faculty and the research, are clearly global leaders. I mean, we could wax poetic about all of the things that are going on that are known literally on a global scale, not just a national scale, global impact. So your charge is to think globally, act locally, and actually make an impact on the planet right here in Tucson, Arizona. Is that a good way to describe it? You're putting the real everyday things that the university does in terms of fleet management, waste management, what the students are doing, into practice every day, not that one big you know, invention or something else that's being created to answer our energy crisis. Yeah?
I think so. I mean, I think what I see my motivation is really working with everyone who's responsible for all those things you talked about.
Right.
And asking how we can do more, right, and helping them identify what that more is.
Okay. That's a really good way to put it. What do you see your sense of students? When I interface with students on a very limited basis, and it's one of my dreams to interface with them a lot more, talk to me a little bit about their mindset. Now, with your job, I would assume you're working with people that have a big hope for the future. But students in general, are they the impetus behind a lot of changes at universities here and around the country? My information says that a lot of students care about a sustainability policy when they're selecting a university. And the U of A would certainly stand out. So hanging around with the kids, as I call them, they're kids to me. Where are they?
You know, I'll first speak about universities in general, and I believe that it's true that students are, in many cases, driving the development of sustainability programs and curriculums. Their demand, as well as I think people who, administrators and faculty and people who run universities are recognizing that the world around them is demanding more of that. And as I said before, universities tend to be fairly progressive places, so it's not surprising. And I'm always looking for evidence, data, and, you know, anecdotal as well as, you know, kind of hard numbers to demonstrate to me as well as to others that I work with what students want, what students think, and use that as a way to guide how we move forward. So I work with a number of students directly who, again, you know, will work with a bunch of other students on projects, various initiatives around campus. And at the same time, I talk to professors. I give a lot of guest lectures. And every time I do that, I try to gain some kind of insight into the students in the room, what it is they're interested in. I recently had the opportunity to talk at the largest class, which is an intro. It's pre-business, MIS 111,
okay,
and it's taught in Centennial Hall. It has 1,700
gosh
students. And so you're up on the stage, and they have the clicker technology with the
multiple
choice questions. And we got some great information about what those freshmen think in terms of sustainability and what it means to business education and their own values.
I want to tell you that they did not have those clickers and whatever you just said when I attended the University of Arizona. We were talking about it. We had to go down to school and register. That's how many generations ago. You had to go and stand in line and hope you got your class. So there are so many wonderful advances in technology that eliminate the need for those long lines, and it's very sustainable. What are I'd love you to talk about some of the things about which you're most passionate and excited about, some outstanding programs at the university that you're either starting or looking at or involved with, because it's always nice to share that with the listeners around the globe. What's going on there that floats Joe Abraham's balloon?
You know, I think what's most exciting to me is this in the area of campus sustainability, and this is me reflecting on my peers at other institutions and sustainability generally at institutions of higher education, is this area in which you see a partnership between students who want to green the campus.
Right.
With people whose job it is to maintain all the systems that we rely on and often take for granted on a daily basis, you know.
Right.
Clean
right.
spaces and
right.
beautiful spaces and
clean
and
water
heat and cooling and all yeah. that kind of stuff. You know, and then faculty who are really motivated to create an educational opportunity for the students. And so where I'm most interested in, and there's a lot of potential, it's already underway, but is the idea that students can work with administrators and staff in areas where they traditionally don't get to work, and that faculty are helping develop the projects that they work on in ways where there's an education and research component. And, you know, if we have time, I can give you an example, but...
we absolutely have time.
Okay.
Go for it.
So one I like to talk about is Professor Jim Riley in Soil, Water, Environmental Sciences. He has partnered with Grant McCormick, who's with Planning, Design, and Construction. And Grant chairs this surface water working group at the university that is primarily business affairs groups, things like risk management, facilities management, planning, design, construction. And so Jim's class, which is called water harvesting, the students will spend the first, they'll spend the second half of their spring semester planning a passive water harvesting project on campus. So they're basically taking the landscape of the campus, and there's oftentimes some xeriscaping involved, and it's they're determining the best places for this. So they're incorporating an educational experience into the campus planning process, which is innovative. And then fast forward, so they develop a project, it gets approved, it gets into the pipeline, and then fast forward to the beginning of the next spring semester when the class happens again, and they're out there digging in the ground. And they're learning about this all the way. And so that same class, once they finish the project that the previous class basically designed and approved with this through this partnership, they're then turning the second half of the semester into designing the next one for the next class.
That's good.
And I know that it won an award when it was initially established by the Association for Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. And it's a great model where you have professors who are partnering with you do see when you start working at the university, there are all these various silos or stovepipes, depending on what metaphor you want to use. And this is a good example of
integration. It's really a great integration. Mm-hmm. I know. I love that. It's very exciting. And you talked about it. We'll just touch on it briefly. If you have something to share about, you talk about other universities. What about you, Joe, interfacing just enough to see what are other universities doing? Who are some of the other leaders? How can you share information? Is that part of what you're doing also? Or is that like, you know, maybe year two or three? Or is it all go along with your, I don't sleep because I have a lot to do?
Well, I definitely try to be involved in national organizations. And so I mentioned the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education, or AASHE, has really grown to become kind of one of the most prominent ones. And they partner with a lot of other organizations that one might be aware of that are either affiliated with or aligned with higher education institutions.
Right.
So but for example, I was up at ASU yesterday and I was meeting with my counterparts there and NAU. And we've been doing that for about 2 years now. And we share ideas, and we're about 20 of us in the room, and we are talking. And then when I go to these national meetings, we'll have retreats. The summer I was at the Arbor Day Foundation in Nebraska City, Nebraska, where there were about 30 of sustainability officers of various flavors at different universities getting training through AASHE. You know, and you go there and you have a really good time and you make friends and you keep in touch. And
you're
part commiserating over the challenges of the position, but also... you know, really understanding that at some level we all share the same challenges, but because universities are so organized, there's so much local context that what may be a great idea in one place may not work somewhere else.
Right.
And so you learn a lot from other people, and that's actually an important strategy for being successful, but it's also a way for, you know, the U of A to get kind of out there.
Get out there and get the national prominence. I know that... it's always kind of like a slippery slope for me. I want the U of A to be recognized for all the right reasons. And to me, I'm very excited, and I've spoken with you about this before, about U of A sports and your announcement of progress there, because I think that's national news. And that is one of the things that could have really big global impact. And I think of it more, not just for great news for the University of Arizona, but really great news for the planet, because others will follow suit. We're held in such high regard in so many arenas because of our sports programs. And I think that's just going to get better with Greg Byrne there. So I think it's great. Now, it's a perfect segue onto, you know, you talked about interfacing with universities on the national level. What is your vision for you and your role in terms of your interface with the community? Because I know you're asked to be on committees. I know you're asked to speak at different groups. What are you doing to kind of develop that partnership between the U of A and a lot of great community organizations? How do you do it, and how do you pick and choose?
You know, I have held back on my own proactive engagement with outreach, mostly because I'm just getting my hands
right
on the enormity of the university.
The handle community. On what you have to do inside.
We've got 40,000 students and 15,000 employees, and most of that's, you know, on the main campus, but there's the College of Ag and others facilities.
Right, Biosphere 2 is a half-day trip.
Right, and so it can be really, I think it's really important to kind of focus on the university as a whole and making
sure. And not
sure
dilute
that,
your effort. Yeah.
Yeah, and making sure that people know that there's an office and that we have an agenda and that we want to work with them and that we're a resource for them. but at the same time, it's important to get out there. I mean, to be perfectly frank, I'm oftentimes surprised and sometimes amused at what people think my role is. And what I have to tell them is I have lots of responsibility, but none of the authority. When I do outreach, for example, I tend to not worry if it is that I feel like maybe I'm not doing enough, because as I was saying earlier, there's so much outreach at the university, and you know, it may not be directly about sustainability, but it might be something about that. And what we end up with is the university is doing plenty to reach out and engage in the state of Arizona, in the city, in the region, Southern Arizona, but you know, around the world. And so that I'm not getting to that yet is not a big deal. But I could see when I have a better sense of how the office fits within the entire university, and I am building those kinds of partnerships with other organizations like Institute of the Environment, and that it allows me to get out there.
And it's really interesting. I'm reflecting while you're speaking about it. It's really in Tucson, and you know that I'm out there participating in a lot of these groups and sitting on a bunch of committees, and I'm part of Saba Green Building Council, and you know, there's Sustainable Tucson, there's the Green Chamber, there's all of the efforts that Pima Association of Governments has. I mean, there's so many, and I'm in the same situation. It's like you have to pick and choose, because my whole big mission is preservation of the planet. But it would be great if there was an office of sustainability kind of orchestrating a lot of these things. I mean, all of the solar that's going on. We have Brad Lancaster, who lives here. You know what I mean? So there's a lot going on. And to see an integrated approach in the community, at sometimes I get frustrated, because there's a lot of efforts. And to harness the power of that collective effort, I think, would be absolutely something awesome. I just thought of that role for some organization. But then it's you know, there is the silo, there is what I'm doing, there is the whole issue of cooperation, and that's very similar to what you're having to do and make that happen all over the place. So you want to talk a little bit about the Green Fund? I think that's a really innovative, exciting concept, and we have about 3 minutes till the break, and I'd love to know more about the Green Fund and share it with our listeners.
Sure. So part of working with the previous president, President Shelton, the students, the main driver with that was that the students that were really behind that were coming to the university, trying to develop projects and recognizing they would spend their whole undergraduate career raising funds and building support for the project, so that finally when they had everything in place, they'd be graduating. And so there was a challenge with that. So the idea was to... that these are usually educational opportunities that are very valuable in terms of, you know, completing a project like this might get you the interview, it'd be a great story for, you know, to help you land a job or something like that. The Green Fund Committee the Green Fund was established at the same time the office was. I'm one of two advisors for the committee. It's all rolls up to the Vice President of Student Affairs, who's in charge of this fee and other fees. And what we do is we're in the second year of funding, and the committee of 10 students, some of which are appointed by student body presidents and some are selected from at large, mm-hmm. We work with them to develop a call for proposals, and that call has already been issued. We're in the process of, we've received pre-proposals, given feedback, and this is from faculty and staff and students, and February 1 is the deadline for proposals that will be considered for funding. We'll have a public meeting in March, and then that funding is available next fiscal year, which begins in July. And so we've gone through, I said, one funding cycle, about 20 projects were funded. And that was actually 2 years of funding, so it was a little over $700,000. But we've had everything from the establishment of new courses to the development of a biodiesel production facility that's recycling our used cooking oil from our unions, that students are running at our ag center, basically developing the capacity of our campus arboretum to manage itself as a carbon sequestration.
So it gives money to some really great ideas, and mm-hmm. because sometimes things really cost money.
Yeah.
And that's awesome to be able to support students, faculty, and staff. Okay, we're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, Joe Abraham, University of Arizona, Director of Sustainability. Please stay here with me because we're going to hear about his vision for the future.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green. Do you know that you can save up to $258 a year on fuel costs when you drive a VW 2011 Jetta TDI clean diesel from Chapman? And you can travel up to 609 miles per tank and reduce those ugly, sooty emissions by 90%. And remember, Chapman doesn't just sell cars. They provide you with the best ownership experience possible. Visit them at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to green up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. I have the pleasure, Mr. Green has the pleasure of sitting here with Joe Abraham, who's the director of the Office of Sustainability, a relatively new, albeit extremely exciting position at the University of Arizona. Joe, thanks again for being here. And I always have to put the plug. Remember to follow Mrs. Green on Facebook and Twitter, because I've become a little bit of a tweeting fool. I'm not quite to the Greg Byrne level, but when I learn to do it on my phone better, you'll be hearing a lot of tweets from Mrs. Green, because there's always exciting information coming up. And I have to do a perfect example because I have a whirling dervish brain. I mentioned that I was at Rotary this morning, and one of the past district governors is in my club, and he brought up, and it is all connected to sustainability, that it's the one-year anniversary today of zero cases of polio being reported in India. And, you know, Rotary's mission for the past 15 years has been the eradication of polio on a global scale. We've raised hundreds of millions of dollars. Bill Gates Foundation has put in hundreds of millions, literally $500 million to help us with the eradication. And you know what it means. It means clean water. It means, you know, how all of that that goes with a sustainable community. So he got it on a tweet message, because he's on the International Committee for Eradication of Polio. So that's how the world works. News right at your fingertips. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, I do want to talk about your vision for the future, because it matters to me. And I find your forthrightness and absolutely clear boundaries and vision for what you want to do very refreshing. I mean, being scattered and a whirling dervish and having all this delusion wouldn't really help what you're trying to do. But I want to talk a little bit about Earth Day. And my frustration with Earth Day, to be right up front, is that it's, I am so glad there is an Earth Day. I think the tagline should be every day is Earth Day. That would be really a great message to send. But how important in terms of what happens at the university, does it have an impact? Is it a feel-good thing? What's your vision for that? Because it gets a lot of attention globally. I mean, it does. Earth Day is huge, the anniversary of it, lots of good projects, lots of great people come together. And I get frustrated because, again, there can be 17 events that you're asked to go to. I know I am. Like, which one am I going to pick as Mrs. Green? So how much of a value do you put on that? A modicum or a lot? Or are the students excited about it? You can wax poetic here on Mrs. Green's World about Earth Day.
Well, I'll start by saying Earth Day is an important opportunity to engage people. I wish that I could get away with spending less time on it because I've found that event coordination and organizing takes a tremendous amount of time and time that I don't
energy
have.
Drac, it is a vampire. It's an energy vampire.
Yeah, but it's something you kind of can't do in this area. So fortunately, the students have traditionally put on Earth Day. And they've continually built up their capacity to put on a good show and bring people in. And this year, the university is having a Earth Day on the main gate area, and that's something that the students had
right,
set up.
Right.
And so we're just now getting our planning committee together, even though the students have been doing a lot of planning this fall. And so hopefully what we'll do is we'll keep them out in front and support them and all their efforts, because sometimes there's just too much to do.
Right, right.
But I think we're trying to make it more of a community effort. It'll be, I think, in the afternoon and the evening on the Friday before Earth Day, which is a Sunday.
Which is also good, yeah.
Yeah, and try to make it easy for university units to participate so that it's something that's exciting both for the university community as well as people who are able to come down to Main Gate.
I've been down to some of those events where they literally have closed the streets off,
and
it's really exciting. I mean, there is really a buzz, there's a charge, there's lots of good things happening. I remember when I went once and the Eller School had won a national competition for the proposal they did for Honda on hybrid cars. Mm. And I mean, I went down there and I just didn't want to leave. And it was, you know, all of the community representatives from Tucson, not just college students. And it was a lot of fun, which is always one of my key ingredients. You have such a good partnership with the whole Marshall Foundation and that whole area down there. So, but you do echo my frustration a little bit about the coordination of effort and the time that it takes. And maybe there'll be more partnerships to come with the University of Arizona, because we should do one big, huge Earth Day event and rock it, if you ask me. But we'll see what happens, what type of influence I can have that. So I'm going to ask you, again, it's like I know Joe Abraham and the director of the Office of Sustainability are an integrated approach, but what do you believe are some of the biggest challenges we face as a planet? I really like to ask people that to see, you know, what do you really think and what motivates you to get up every day and face all of the daunting challenges that you have, which are exciting, but they're daunting because there are many.
You know, I do spend a fair amount of time thinking about this. I believe that some of the biggest challenges are ones that we may know about, but we don't necessarily put out in front. And I think the problem is that, you know, we can think of events over the past decade or in our lives where we didn't anticipate them, and the impact that they've had on how we moved our future
forward.
Since
That's
that
right.
point
That's
has
exactly
been
right.
profound. And so, you know, you think about water, for example, and there's a lot of people who believe that water will be the thing that people fight wars over in this century. And I'm sure there's examples of that happening already, but that's yet to come. You know, climate change is a big issue. I think that the real challenge of moving away from carbon-based fuels and increasing our greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere is just enormous, and that the effort we put in so far has really shown to be not on par with what is necessary to avoid dramatic climate change. But, you know, I think also things like global poverty those kinds of issues can have really overriding effects. When we think about climate change, for example, and what that the impacts that may have from a changing of the climate.
Right. The food supply, just right. that alone. Yep, and but, water.
Right, but then in terms of poverty and access to the resources people need to survive and to live quality lives, that can actually be just as challenging, if not more challenging. And so it's hard for me to say, you know, 1, 2, 3. But I think that we have a challenging future ahead of us if a more sustainable world is our goal.
And I don't think it is 1, 2, 3 either. I think that is the silo. And I think that you're right. There's lots of fronts that we can choose to focus on. To me, one of the hot ones for me and has been from the birth of Mrs. Green is water. And I think it's a perfect example in using your description is the oceans and the shape our oceans are in. I mean, we don't drink that water, but what's happening and how quickly and how much trash and how many species of fish are being eliminated. I don't think anyone really consciously wants that. They think, oh, I'll throw this here and I'll destroy the ocean today. But I think that's one of those that it's going to reach a tipping point. And we can get this one. That's what I'm saying. We can get a handle on this one, people. We don't have to give up with small changes collectively. I think that's a perfect example of what can happen in the scenario that you described, that everybody's sleeping and then they wake up and they say, oh my gosh, we destroyed that ocean. I mean, there are areas, as I'm sure you know, on the globe where there's just dead, it's the water might as well be dead. There's no life that they can find. And that makes me sad, and that's part of what my role is with Mrs. Green, is saying to people, just we're all connected. The whole globalization is really huge. And what about the, you know, one of the challenges, I think, is when you talk about our dependence, you know, fossil fuel and the carbon emissions from vehicles. How can we stand up to that? It's daunting to me at times, and I'm pretty Pollyanna and, you know, poly positive. But when you see what's happening in places with hundreds of millions of people like China and India, and the rate at which they are buying cars that are not necessarily APA standards and clean air, we are a globe, we are a sealed envelope. So that's one of the things that I just wonder, is that one that you say we have to flip the switch pretty quickly on?
You mean in terms of
automobiles and transportation. I mean, it's really, that's where the numbers of people, there are alternatives, I believe, at our fingertips, but it's mm-hmm. shifting the manufacturing plants and putting charging stations in and, you know, lots of different solutions.
Right. I mean, emerging markets are dominating, and it's really hard to tell people who have a much lower standard of living that they can't enjoy what we have. And I'm not entirely sure what the answer is, because we could completely transform our society, and that could be completely undermined by the increases in, you know, resource consumption in places where their economies are developing and catching up to ours. So it is daunting. I mean, there's a lot of dimensions one has to look at. There's politics. You know, how do we allow for technology transfer so that it doesn't compromise global competitiveness?
Right.
You know, those kinds of
right.
things.
Right.
I think that it becomes really difficult. And you see the political negotiations around global climate change pacts. You really
it's
do see...
It's not all about the greater good.
Well, I mean, I think everyone wants to do the right thing, but I think that there's just some powerful interests at play where it makes it hard to come to some kind of mutual agreement.
And you and I have spoken about when Dan Arvizu came from the National Renewable Energy Lab, and he said one of the things that really has to happen in our country, because we have fallen behind in many areas, you know, we're supposed to, the enlightened leaders, is to take it out of the political arena in this country. And that's been my mantra since I started the show. The earth doesn't care how you vote. They just know the impact. I think another example of that is to add to your list is global waste. And we talk about, you know, our cell phones and our cell phone chargers and the newest computer. And if the iPad 1 comes out, the iPad 2 is coming out, and then the iPad 3 is almost ready. And I get sucked in. I mean, I have an iPad 1 and I want an iPad 2 because it does video. So there's that. And then what do I do with my iPad 2? You know, my iPad 1. And there's so much collective waste. And when you factor in those countries, what do we do with the waste? It's a huge... It's another one that's sneaking up on us, and people are going to say, oh my gosh, there really is no more room. And it's happening in communities already. I mean, we don't really want to become a dump, and what we're doing with waste and even recycling, I mean, it's huge. So what about, where would you like to see your role and the Office of Sustainability be under your leadership in like 3 to 5 years? What are some of the things, like if you ran the zoo in all the wonderful ways that means, that I mean that, what would you like, some of the things that you'd like to see happen, your dreams?
Well, I have to say that the way it was set up initially was very, very thoughtful.
That's great. Awesome
and,
to hear that.
And I've been very pleased with how effective my relationship with senior administration is.
It was set up to succeed.
It is. And at the same time, also where it's been placed within the university, within student affairs, allows me to work with the various business affairs units like facilities management, planning, site construction, parking, transportation, et cetera. And then also having come from the academic side of the house, knowing how to engage the various, you know, the research community and the academic community. So, it's actually been set up very well, and I think a year into it, I look back on that and not really knowing what I was getting myself into. And what
yeah, but kind of doors pitfalls. Were already open, and that's really great. It's not like you had to pave the way. That's really wonderful to know.
And I think what I'm looking to do is rather than continue to build up my office so that it has more and more centralized capacity.
Right,
I mean, I think that's going to be needed, but that we've done a good job of building it up. You know, a year ago it was just me, and now I have 2 grad assistants, a full-time coordinator, 3 undergrad interns. And so, but in within residence life, there's a full-time sustainability coordinator.
Right.
Within facilities management, there's a full-time recycling coordinator. We have staff that work just on, you know, diversity and access. We have paid students working within our student government on composting and creating internship-based programs for students. And so my idea is actually not to really focus on consolidating within the office, but to grow that with investments in the various parts of the university and make sure that it's arranged in such a way that it's very functional. And that kind of goes with how the university operates. We're not a real top-down organization. There's a lot of shared governance going on.
Right.
And I think that building capacity in every area and then making sure that it's not its own island and that they coordinate and communicate is probably the most appropriate way to really see the university continue to become a more sustainable institution.
Yeah, but what a great vision. It's not about building your empire. It's about really creating grassroots systemic change that really is systemic change, because that's the only thing that'll last. It's not a quick fix solution. And integration with all of those other initiatives, to me, is one of the great things. I think the University of Arizona is really lucky to have you. And even though, you know, I want to end on an up note, do you have a biggest challenge that you're working on within the university, or do you feel pretty positive about where you're at, where your department's at, the team that you have, you know, looked at? I don't think of them as problems, but in terms of, you know, challenges, is funding a challenge? Is support, if there's a new president, I mean, are you safely enough in place? I don't mean you, but your department, that will transcend change of administration?
Well, I do look forward to a new president. President Sanders actually been very supportive in his time.
Great.
And you know, again, I would probably get back to the thing that I'm most excited about, but is also very challenging, is the idea that you are integrating operational education or research missions of the university, such that you're kind of greening the campus, where you have student staff and faculty working together on that. So that's to me the greatest challenge, but the most exciting part of my job.
Well, I will tell you, for anybody who listens to this show, which I hope there are many, what a great show. What a great visionary you are. I think you, the University of Arizona, Tucson, and the planet is lucky to have you with your leadership and your passion. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. If you want to know anything about Joe's role, you can email info@mrsgreensworld, and we will connect you, connect the dots.